Welcome home. We are WNSG, AM 1570, Taos in Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, positively getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road for our 27th anniversary, which happens on August the 3rd. By the way, I remember what Jeff Beauchamp said about us. He said we would never make it because we would never have the top-notch talent necessary to make it here. So 27 years later, I am spiking the ball with lottery scratch-offs. I will have some pressure lucks and some lucky seven doublers throughout the month of August. My 27 favorite things to eat in the city. Some of it very, very, humble and meager and inexpensive, and just things that I find delicious. I will be sharing all of them. Many of them I have shared with our sponsors, and we'll be doing later in the month as well. We're getting down to Fadley's. We're going to be going to Coco's. We're going to be coming to Costas and Timonium as well. Just all over the place. We'll be getting there. But we start at the Beaumont on August the 7th. This is not a football segment. This is not a baseball segment. Luke Jones is joining me now. And Luke is a primary wrestling fan. Folks don't know that about him, much like my best friend growing up, Kevin Eck. Wrestling became Kevin Eck's life. It probably would have been your life had there been no football or baseball for you. And the loss of the Hulkster. You and I, we do a WrestleMania piece once a year, usually. Somebody key dies or lives, or Gary Michael Capetta's coming on, I'll call you and say, let's do that. If Jim Ross, ever shows back up at my house or would show back up at my house, I would have you over to be a part of it. I've done a lot of wrestling stuff. I could do a whole day of old Axl Rotten tapes I have, and Vince McMahon's been on this show, and The Rock has been on a couple times, and never had a Steve Weiser with Steve, but I'd like to do that. We broadcast from Raw is War, all of that. I never had Hulk Hogan on the show that I remember. I don't remember ever meeting him. You know what I mean? I met Ric Flair big time. I mean, I was in a room with Ric Flair. We talked. I interviewed him. He signed a little thing for me. I mean, I had interactions with all sorts of wrestlers in different ways. We've had Goldberg on the set at your DDP, your guy. So, I mean, I've done wrestling stuff. I don't. Anything I have with Hulkster is me being a fan. And then the Gawker Media thing, and what a scumbag of a dude he was in the end, and what a racist he was, and what a bad guy, and all the pictures in modern era, him wearing all the MAGA stuff. So I get all of that, but I mean, Hulk Hogan died on the back end of Ozzy Osbourne dying, and all, and it's like been a weird week for a guy that graduated in 1985, Luke, or a kid that was born in 83, right?
Well, let's also throw Malcolm Jamal Warner in there
Sure.
and the Cosby Show, Theo. I mean, regardless of Bill Cosby and the connotations and perception there. I mean, yeah, I'm not gonna lie, Nestor. I mean, and first of all, and I've said this on the show before, in these rare times where we talk wrestling, I mean, other than my faith and my family, I mean, there are two things I've loved from the moment I can remember, I don't know, being 3 years old, to this day. And it's so rare. I heard Bob Costas mention this one time, talking about, his love for baseball, and just thinking how rare it is, and put aside our family, put aside faith, put aside friends, but just entertainment, hobbies, interests that we have, how rare it is to have something that you've loved from the moment you can remember it, and you continue to love it today. I have two things in my life that fit that description: baseball, and more specifically, growing up with the Orioles. It was Cal Ripken and Eddie Murray. I mean, those are my
I have
guys.
Geddy Lee and the
And
Houston Oilers. That's all I got, you know.
the other one was professional wrestling. So Hulk Hogan, I mean, I was born in 1983. I mean, hello, I was exactly who Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan were catering to in 1987, right? Full disclosure, I was actually, I listened to, there's a Sirius XM station, Pro Wrestling 24/7. It just went to a full-blown station after years of just being a three-hour show. I was listening to that and arriving in Owings Mills for training camp on Thursday when they kind of shifted gears. I forget what they were talking about, just something pertaining to WWE or something. And they announced it, and it took my breath away. And I say this with a full recognition that there's a difference here between kayfabe, which is the term that is very well known in wrestling, but it applies to all forms of entertainment in some shape or form. The actual entertainer, right? The persona, and even professional athletes, musicians, actors, we all originally come to appreciate a person because of what they do. Their talent, whether they're playing a role, whatever it is. And we love the instances when we find out that the real life person matches that, but we also know the reality of how many times that doesn't happen. So I'm talking with a reverence about Hulk Hogan, the persona, and what he meant to me, bonding with my father as a youngster when my dad took me to the Civic Center or the Cap Center to see wrestling when I was 3, 4, 5 years old. We weren't a Jim Crockett Promotions family. I wish we had been. That's something I've
Your
gained
dad took
more.
you to the Capitol Center.
Yeah,
He did love you. See that?
once or twice. I mean, and obviously the Civic Center was great because it had both, but I was a WWF kid. I mean, that's who it was for. It was for the kids, right? I mean, if I had been a teenager then, I probably would have liked Jim Crockett Promotions and the NWA way more. But like Hulk Hogan was everything. I mean, you know what? You ask 5-year-old Luke who his biggest heroes were before his, besides his dad and his mom, it was Cal Ripken, Eddie Murray, and Hulk Hogan. I mean, that's just who it was for me. So, you know, when you hear that he's gone, I mean, first of all, you just think about his persona. I mean, he was a superhero in real life, you know, like even though it was a story, right? Even though it's predetermined. I mean, that he's one of those individuals that, you know, you think like I'm not gonna die. Like,
Yeah, the
you know,
gold trunks,
as
the red and the
silly,
gold and the hair and the
I
muscles
mean,
and the yeah.
and you know, there was a little bit of this going on when Ric Flair, if you recall how dire his health situation was 7 or 8 years ago. I mean, he was in a coma for weeks. So you know, it's a conflicting feeling just from the standpoint of fully recognizing the flaws. And the human being, and fully recognizing I have my own flaws, just like any other person does, and I'm not absolving anything that he said or did, or even stories of him politicking as a wrestler that might have been to the detriment of others. But I mean, you're talking about a person that, regardless of any imperfections he had, he brought a heck of a lot of joy to a lot of people for decades. He other wrestlers that, you know, even if there were stories of him, you know, later in his career, maybe kind of exercising his clout in a way that wasn't the most flattering, he made other wrestlers a lot of money. Go look at the old house, you know, the old attendance for the Civic Center or the Cap Center or wherever WWF was doing shows in the 80s. If Hulk Hogan was on the top of the card, it was sold out. If he wasn't on that card, there were
They
maybe
better
four.
have
There
Andre.
were 4,000 people there
Literally,
compared.
they would get Andre because they would couldn't sell tickets.
And like a few years later, Randy Savage kind of filled the Andre role as like a good, not a 1A, but at least a good B to Hogan being the A. But you know, I just think about that. I think about memories that I have with my dad. I mean, my brother and I, to this day, I mean, I'm a big wrestling fan. And my brother and I, we get along well, but he's not into sports a whole lot. He'll watch the Ravens, but maybe I get him to watch an inning of Orioles baseball every now and then. But 80% of what we watch together on television is AEW, WWE, or some kind of other wrestling. You know, sometimes it's something on Peacock, which has the whole WWE and NWA and all kinds of old stuff, and we'll throw that on. So anyone who loves professional wrestling, I mean, and this is where
Well,
it's
he
tough, but
built it. I mean, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
he and Vince McMahon, and you know, Vince McMahon with the things you can talk about with him and his transgressions as a human being. But you think about how much those two did and for what's become a multi-billion dollar industry. I mean, not just WWE. I mean, WWE is the Disney of pro wrestling. It's the overwhelming. It's the Kleenex brand that everyone just refers to wrestling as WWE now. But there are other companies, AEW, TNA, you know, Ring of Honor for years. I mean, you go down the list, New Japan, you know, as far as global brands, you know, but none of it would be what it is today without Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon and that partnership. And neither one of them would have been as successful as they became without the other. And, you know, again, there's a conflicted element to that. At the same time, regardless of things that I know about Terry Bollea, or flaws, imperfections about him, I'm also not going to sit here and lie to you and express any shame that I was a Hulkamaniac in the 80s and 90s. And I love the kayfabe part of it, and I still do to this day. And I'll give you one. I think I've told you this probably. When Hulk Hogan lost to the Ultimate Warrior, WrestleMania 6. So this was 1990. I was 6.5 years old then. So I sobbed, and that was the moment when my parents kind of peeled back the curtain for me a little bit and said, you know, like, you know, this is kind of, it's a show. And I sobbed. You would have thought it was the Raven, you know, the Ravens didn't even exist then, but you know, just talking in terms of you're a Baltimore sports fan, the Ravens, the Orioles, and the Terps all lost the championship, you know, their respective championships on the same day. I mean, that's how devastated I was. And it's silly to talk about it now. I laugh about it now, obviously, but that's how much it meant to me as a kid. So yeah, I was sad. And you know, some of that sadness is also knowing how beloved his persona was and that not being able to be better married with him as a human being, in a way that I would say someone like Ric Flair, who is far from not a perfect individual, and you know, there are things about him over the years that you would hear and not some things that I'm guessing he's not proud of
Yeah,
and
he's not
all
me
that.
too. He'd
But
me three.
sure.
Yeah.
But my point, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is I
I was
think,
a Flair guy in that relationship, by the way. I love Ric
yeah,
Flair. Ric
yeah.
Flair dies, that's going to mess me up.
Sure. But you know, there's something about Flair that, you know, even with knowing all that, I feel like there was, you know, he as he's aged,
He has a likability about
he's
him.
allowed himself to be more vulnerable in a way that Ric Flair and Richard Fleer, the human being, flawed as he might be, he's allowed himself to be vulnerable to a point where I think people even accept, yeah, you know, you've done some scuzzy things over the years, big time. And that might be the nicest way to say it, but you know, I think Hogan missed the boat on that with not showing some contrition over certain things, you know, and obviously that, you know, people are going to feel a certain way about it, but acknowledging that part of it and wanting to show sensitivity to that part of it, I still love the persona, and it's something that I will remember fondly, and makes me think of my dad. And I had friends and family members text me just because they know how much of a wrestling fan I am
Dude, when
and
Hulk
growing up in
Hogan
that
walked
era.
into the arena and you're 6 years old, 8 years old,
I
10 years
mean,
old, and I'm 30 at the time,
it's amazing.
it was Ray Lewis, right? I mean,
And
they're very similar, and Caitlin Clark's dealing with that, the Beatles, the New Kids
it's
on the Block. Pick anything you want. Pick that concert when Van Halen was on top of the world, or with David Lee Roth, whatever. Like that
larger than
moment.
life.
Larger than life. And that's what we talked about Live Aid last week in
Yeah.
that way. Like we talk about Led Zeppelin that way. We talk about things that way. Hulk Hogan, certainly for me, you know, like, so my Hulk Hogan stories predate your birth, but I was a wrestling head big time, 1977, 78, 79, 80. Way more into wrestling than I lead on. I think you know that. And I've shared images and pictures, and I have lots of memories of all of that part of life and my friendship with Kevin Eck in middle school and high school. And I sort of wrestling jumped the shark for me as a fan, as someone that would pay to go do it, was really into watching it every week when Hulk Hogan won. When
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan won, it was January 1984. I had a pregnant girlfriend. I was working at the paper. It was about that point where it jumped the shark in a big way, in a way where like it was on the Saturday Night Live thing and it was on TV all the time. And it just, I stopped following it, like to
Yeah.
know who the champion was or any of that. So like when Mick Foley and all of that happened with, you know, came Raw was War. I don't know who the champions are. And I
Yeah.
think there was a period where like Raw's work came back in a period of time, and Hollywood Hogan and all that with the black beard and the wearing the black and all of that 15 years later, that it became popular around my radio station, around Ray Bachman, around people being here, people like you that liked it. But for me, I was a huge wrestling fan from 1975 until 1984.
Yeah.
That being said, Hulk Hogan was moving through the chain of command in the AWA in the Midwest and Vern Gagne's promotion, where Nick Bockwinkel was the champ and Bobby Heenan was the heel manager. And they had old Crusher and Bruiser and old Vern Gagne, his son Greg Gagne, in the business out of Minnesota and Chicago. Hogan came from that out of the Memphis promotion. And I could get Chip Namius on to talk about Jerry Lawler and the King and Mid-South and all of that. But Hogan came into the Capitol Center as a bit of an unknown. He had not been on television. He had not been on the WWE. But he came in and had a match with Bob Backlund. And like, it was really weird because it was right around the time he was about to get the Rocky role and the Thunderlips role and all of that, and come in as a heel with Freddie Blassie as his manager, and into the WWE. McMahon was about to buy him from the promotion of the AWA, and he was in a match at the Capitol Center that was like a dark match that nobody really knows about, and you know about it because you're a wrestling head. If you have more history than I have, tell me, but DC kind of dabbled with Dusty Rhodes at one point with a bullwhip thing with a lot of blood and Superstar Graham when they kind of crossed the WWWE NWA divide. So I saw Hogan before anybody saw Hogan because he had never wrestled around here. And this Capitol Center thing was like really like weird because Backlund was, you know, he was doing the Greg Valentine and whoever the heels were, Adrian Adonis, George Steele, whoever the bad guy, Killer Khan, whoever the bad guys were then. And Hulk Hogan, there was no typical storyline buildup where bad guy comes in, beats up somebody, gets a manager, you know, beats up Ivan Putski and then gets the title shot, a shot at the belt. And Hogan did that. So Hogan then became part of the vernacular because after that Capitol Center event, it was March of 80, 81, somewhere in there.
Sounds about right.
I can look it up. And I did a couple of weeks ago because I'm trying to get Jeff Krulik on, the guy from the Capitol Center book. And actually, there was a piece with Leonard Raskin and I from Costas and Dundalk where we did a Capitol Center book piece. I held up my ticket stub from that event and I had Googled it. I Googled it a couple of weeks ago because like Tony Atlas was on that car, like just trying to, Larry Zbysko, you know, it was that era. And Hogan became, from that moment till 3 years later when he won the belt and the whole thing with Iron Sheik kind of happened after Backlund. They were trying to get rid of Backlund. And really moving into the entertainment era,
Sure.
moving into the Cyndi Lauper, Freddie Albano, where it was truly going to make a lot of money and be a national act. And as you said, become Kleenex for wrestling. Hogan was identified as the guy, and Ted Turner sort of had, you know, his thing and their money and TBS and cable television and all of that. And that became really the battle between Coke and Pepsi. But Hogan, man, like 1983, summer of 83, he's still in the NWA. And he had been in the WWE as a bad guy with Blassie, went away, and then McMahon put money up, and I guess obviously Thunderlips had happened. In the summer of 1983, my family's greatest trip ever, my dad came and said, "Where do you want to go?" I said, "I want to go to St. Louis, Kansas City, and see baseball games, see the Phillies play." My mom always wanted to see the fountains in Kansas City. I told you that when we were out in Kansas City 11 years ago now. And the Kiel Auditorium had wrestling matches, and we ordered away for Phillies Cardinals tickets. Danny Cox made his major league debut. I saw Steve Carlton pitch, you know, the whole deal. It was 83 Phillies. So they're about to play the Orioles in the World Series. And I went out to St. Louis in my Rush Moving Pictures tour shirt, and we checked into the hotel, Circle Roadway Inn. If I ever took you there for barbecue to Pappy's, it's right by the Washington U campus. And it's gone now. It's a parking lot. The hotel was a Circle Roadway Inn. And we checked in, and I got the St. Louis Post-Dispatch because I was such a newspaper head. I mean, I was just like obsessed with wanting to work in a newspaper. I bought newspapers, I read newspapers. I was obsessed with newspapers, clipping them, reading them, kind of like the guy in the Clint Eastwood movies, but without the all the rage. Play Misty for me. And without the psycho. And when we checked into the hotel, I bought the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and there was an ad in the paper. And I got to get Pika to pull this ad because the ad was wrestling Friday night at the Kiel Auditorium. I'm like, Dad, Ric Flair's wrestling Harley Race. We're not going to the baseball game. I know we came out here. I know we took the Greyhound 12 hours out here. I know we have tickets. And I know. And my dad's like, fine, we'll sell the tickets. We sold the tickets to the bellhop. We walked to the Kiel Auditorium. My dad and I walked down there and we walked in. We didn't sell the baseball tickets till we got the wrestling tickets. My dad, pulled out $7, $21. The guy said we have first row. My dad said, give them to us. So we had
Not
first
even going to get
row,
you parking for an event now.
$7. We had first row. And on that card, Baron von Roschke was on that card, and to me, he was very exotic. And I know I can probably get him on the show, and I'm a jerk for not because he does things like my show. He's up in Minnesota, and actually, Bob Hagen knows him. So I'd like to get the Baron on, but to me, the Baron is in character. Like I didn't even watch the documentary because I want to stay kayfabe with him. And apparently, there's a superstar Graham Vice thing that came out that I need to watch too.
Yeah, I just watched it a couple weeks
Was
ago.
it good?
I mean, yeah, I mean a lot of
See, I was a superstar guy, so.
yeah, the dark side of and obviously it's called Dark Side of the Ring, like, it ends up most of them are just sad, I mean you
Well,
realize, yeah. Well, and I mean,
that's
yeah.
where I was going to take it with Hogan. Because I
Yeah.
looked up and I'm like, Hulk Hogan died. I went and said to my wife, Hulk Hogan died. And I came
Yeah.
back and said 71. And I'm like, I'm going to put something up. And I was going to tell you this story about the Kiel Auditorium
Yeah.
because I put these pictures up. So 1983, we get these tickets and it was Harley Race and Ric Flair. So like that alone, like literally, dude, I remember being in the lobby of this Circle Hotel looking down at the paper. And I said to my dad, I'm like, we gotta go see Ric
Yeah.
Flair. It's
Yeah.
Ric Flair. And Hogan was on the card. Blackjack Mulligan was on the card. I have pictures outside. And I had a Pentax camera, the same one I always took the concert pictures with and whatnot that I got for my birthday the year before. So I was a little bit of a serial picture taker. I was trying to, hone my skills. And so I took a couple of pictures and I stood outside the Kiel. My parents went in and I was outside alone when the wrestlers were arriving. Ric Flair showed up in a white Lincoln Town car, hair out. I got pictures of all of that. So I had a fanboy moment in 1983. With the Hulkster before you
That's
were
great.
born, you were in your mother's belly. You're about to be born. So summer of 83. So, it's not lost on me. And so I came in, I said he's 71, and I went to put a post up, and I'm like, what a piece of shit that guy was. I'm thinking like the Gawker thing, and I'm thinking like just all of it. I even remember Aubrey Huff being with the Bubba the Love Sponge guy,
Oh, yeah.
and and I know that that was like all a thing, right? And then I didn't even realize till David Aldridge, my NBA reporting friend who worked at the Washington Times a million years and has attended every NBA final for like 35 years, put up the racist stuff. And I'm not
Yeah.
black, so I like it's not the first thing I think of. You know what I
Sure.
mean? If I had heard that, and I have African American friends, several who are big wrestling fans who
Yeah.
put up things about Hulk Hogan, I'm thinking, nah. And I put up my pictures and I have my memories, like you have your memories, and they're tied to your dad and to the Hulkamania doll and all that. But I never had any interaction with the man himself
Yeah.
at all,
I never
other
met
than
him.
taking these pictures in St. Louis and seeing him at the Capitol Center. And after that, dude, I'm really being honest with you. I don't know why. I just didn't like wrestling anymore. In the same way I don't like the NBA anymore, and that's, in the same way I never liked lacrosse, in the same way I never fell in love with golf. You know what I mean? Like I liked wrestling a lot And the minute he won, it became such a ubiquitous, it was a jump the shark. I didn't hate wrestling and everybody knew who he was, but I didn't like watch it every week. And I got invited to go to the matches, and Kevin, my best friend, was obsessed with it. And I was always much more, I'll go see Flair. When Flair's in town, I'll go see the Bash. I was way. Although I attended when Cyndi Lauper came in and they did the Hall of Fame, I was at that night when she performed and Albano. I mean, when they had the Slammies, right? I did. I went to the arena for things, but I didn't go to the Capitol Center to see Hulk Hogan
You
on a
weren't
house party.
following it anymore.
I wasn't following it anymore, and it wasn't because of Hulk Hogan. It just was because I knew it was fake, and I discovered girls and Hammerjack. I mean, come on, dude. I mean, I'm 16, 17. I had a son. I had a job at the paper. I was hustling rock stars. It just it wasn't. I think, yeah.
I think your story is more typical of much more a much larger percentage of the general population than those of us who love wrestling, right? And you know, for me, what's just fascinating about it, I mean, obviously I talked about the Hulkamaniac era of my youth, but here it was Hulk Hogan turning heel as part of the NWO. And I didn't jump onto it right away because that was 96. Full disclosure, it came down to the fact that my family finally had satellite. You know, I could
Right.
finally get TNT and USA. That I get, he brought he sucked me back
You're
in. And
making your key point for the Orioles' future. If I can't get the
oh,
games, I can't
sir,
follow the
no
story.
question, no question. But so and to be clear, like I yes, I consider myself a lifelong wrestling fan, but from about 1993 through 98, I didn't really watch it anymore. Hawk had, you know, dipped out of WWF at that point. He had gone to WCW. I was mildly curious. I remember watching the pay-per-view when he finally wrestled Flair because that never happened in WWF when Flair had been there a couple years earlier. But I didn't watch it. It wasn't on TV regularly, and I wasn't on broadcast TV. But the whole NWO thing and a bad guy, Hulk Hogan, when I was 15, that was appealing to me. And then Stone Cold Steve Austin, and then The Rock, and then Goldberg, and like, you know, the whole Attitude Era, the Monday Night Wars, all that. And then the final, you know, the final act, and I don't want to get drag on too long here, but The Rock became my guy. You know, he was my guy that, you know, from that era, you know, late high school into college before he started doing movies and abandoned WWE as a full-time wrestler. But he had the WrestleMania match between, you know, it was build as wrestling's past versus wrestling's future, even though it was hilarious because The Rock, that was his last year as a full-time wrestler at that point. But it was Hogan against Rock at Sky Dome in Toronto. Hogan, it was the NWO version. You know, the NWO had invaded WWF at that point. I think they were still WWF for like another few months at that point. And the whole story was supposed to be babyface Rock against heel Hogan at Sky Dome. The Toronto crowd had none of that. And everyone always thinks the top WrestleMania moment, what? Hogan versus Andre, WrestleMania 3, Pontiac Silverdome. I watched that on closed circuit TV in Towson with my dad. It's one of my earliest flashbulb memories as a, what, 3.5 year old. But that Hogan Rock match, they changed it on the fly because that crowd was so overwhelmingly nostalgic for Hulkamania that he worked babyface and Rock shifted to heel. And it was an amazing match. I mean, it really was. And this was Hulk Hogan back in WWF for the first time in what, 9 years at that point in time. And it was just extraordinary. And it gave him a final run as a, you know, regular wrestler in WWF. And
He came back as Hulk Hogan at the end, blonde hair and
He
like.
so he came back to WWF as part of the NWO, Nash and Scott Hall also, but it was short-lived because the fans were just they were so bonkers about him being back in WWF that they just wanted to cheer him. And then eventually they leaned into it, and you know, he had one more brief month-long title reign a couple months later. And you know, so I mean, I just spelled it out for you right there from me. In the mid 80s, as a little 2 and 3 year old who knew all the wrestlers, but Hulk Hogan was his guy, to at that point in my life being what 19 years old, I guess, and loving it all over again. I mean, it's just, anyone who loves wrestling, whether you were a Hulk Hogan guy or whether you're a Ric Flair guy or whoever, plenty of people don't like Hulk Hogan, and understandably so with the away from the ring, Terry Bollea. I get it. But anyone who loves wrestling without Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon in that partnership, who knows what it would look like today? I mean, it certainly would not be what it is today if not for that, because those two took something that was so carny and so regional, the territories, all of it. It was small potatoes everywhere, except for a couple parts of the country, and they made it this global entity. I mean, it's just, you have to recognize that regardless of how you feel personally about Terry Bollea or any of that. And I'm not going to tell anyone how to feel. I don't, there's plenty of things he said and done that I don't like. I'm not going to sit here and defend it, but recognizing, I mean, I've heard him called the, he's the Babe Ruth of wrestling, and no disrespect to Bruno or Flair or anyone like that, but Hogan's the biggest superstar, biggest draw that the business has ever seen. And everything it is today can be connected back to Hulkamania blowing up in the mid 80s and what that meant for the business, for better or for worse, but for how successful and how lucrative it became and what it is today. I mean, you have to recognize that regardless of how anyone wants to feel about them, and they can feel how they want.
Well, I'm glad we're
Again,
reminiscing. I'm glad we did
yeah.
this because, like, I had my own memories that I could get off my chest about it. But the other part of this is I came back in and said scumbag, and I'm like found those pictures and I put them up. You can find them on my Facebook of a very Thunder Lips looking. It was that era. It was 1983. Looks like Thunder Lips, literally out on the street. A dude was touching his muscles in the picture. It's funny. But I said 71, and I'm thinking. Sad as a 56, soon to be 57-year-old guy, and I'm thinking, like half these guys have been dead for you mentioned Macho Man, he's been dead 20 years.
Yeah,
Like, yeah, I mean, like,
15, 15, 14 years for Macho Man, yeah.
so I'm just like, for me, I'm like, all George Saharian, just look that up, doc, doctor in attendance at ringside, Dr. George P. Saharian. I remember hearing that, and then he's getting indicted 3 years later, and Hogan was in the middle of that, and that was 1985. It's 40 years ago that Hogan was involved in stuff that could have put him in prison. Saying all of that at 71 and the Superstar Graham thing that I said I'm going to watch because I am, the dark side of the ring is that, like, there's no happy ending for any of these cats. Like, and to your point, Flair finding some level of being beloved. I'm thinking of the Ricky Steamboats and different people like
Oh, and
that.
there are good people in the business. I mean, there are, but it's a, and you just alluded to it, it's really hard life, regardless of any choices, bad characters, bad actor. It's a really
It was a
hard
tough way to
life.
make a living.
It really was. And that's where I look, what
And also,
my
it
reverence is
was
for,
owned by Vince, who was a prick. So that
sure.
on top of
And there were other
everything
territories.
else,
And there
right?
were other territories and people that ran territories that weren't, didn't take care of wrestlers well either. I mean, it's, but all that said, the reverence I have, it's for the kayfabe, the magic of the show, right? In the same way that we love movies, we love music, even though we know that there are musicians that are complete a-holes, right? I mean, there's the separation of the art from the artist, and that's where I'm coming from here
I
with the
have to do that
reverence
every time I hear a
that
Michael
I'm in.
Jackson song, right? Like,
Sure,
literally. So
sure.
that's
So,
where I am.
but I'm going to miss Hulk Hogan from a kayfabe standpoint, and those memories will be with me for the rest of my life. Because I, again, I think of my dad. I think of my dad with Orioles baseball and Ravens football, and obviously Pink Floyd, and yeah, watching wrestling, because that's something we did from the time I can remember all the way up to, he passed in 04. We were still watching wrestling then together. So lots of great memories, and Hulk Hogan was in the middle of that, for better or for worse, in terms of acknowledging Terry Bollea.
Drink your milk, eat your cookies, take your vitamins, say your prayers, Luke.
What you gonna do?
Yeah, the Hulkster. He is Luke Jones. I'm Nestor. We are WNSD AM 15. So we'll come back, talk about more important. Oh, that's pretty important, but we're positive. It's Hulk Hogan. Stop my day.